18. Royal Palace, City of Tangier, Kingdom of Taro. King Gorgia III was in a foul mood. That had become, unfortunately, common over the last couple of years, since the effectively total destruction of his fleet at the Battle of Rock Point, which had occurred almost precisely 2 years ago, as a matter of fact, if anyone had been marking his calendar to keep track. Gorgia didn't need to mark any calendars, but he'd definitely been keeping track. He'd been rather strongly motivated in that regard. At the moment, he stood gazing northwest out of his palace window, up the length of Thole Bay. 700-plus miles, Thole Bay reached from the city of Tangier to Cape Thole and North Head, and, beyond that, the Gulf of Taro and the continent of East Haven. It was a magnificent stretch of salt water. It might be a bit shallow in places, its shoals a bit treacherous here and there, but overall it offered Tangier splendid access to the seas of the world, and the broad sweep of the city's wharves and warehouses was ample proof of the way in which the world's commerce had taken advantage of that access.
"Once upon a time," he thought grumpily.
He ran a hand over his kerchief, the traditional bright, colorful headwear of the Kingdom of Taro, and his foul mood deepened as he contemplated the absence of merchant shipping in that anchorage. The dearth of lighters plying between those non-existent merchant vessels and the city's wharves. The peculiar paucity of longshoremen and stevedores who'd once been employed, loading and unloading the cargoes which no longer filled those extensive warehouses. There was a reason for those absences, for that dearth, a reason which had something to do with the squadron of the Imperial Carisian Navy, no more than a handful of schooners supported by a single division of galleons, who'd taken up residence in Thole Bay, who'd had the sheer effrontery to actually set up their own anchorage in Holm Reach, well inside the bay's protective headlands, to send parties of seamen and marines ashore on Hourglass Island to plant and tend garden plots to provide their crews with fresh vegetables and salads. Somehow, for some reason Gorgia really didn't understand himself, that particular bit of Carisian brashness was especially infuriating. Perhaps, he'd occasionally thought, because he knew he'd brought it on himself. Mostly, at least, he still didn't see any way he could have said no to the offer.
"Not that you tried all that hard," he thought moodily now. "It seemed like such a good idea at the time, after all, which probably should have reminded you that things which seem too good to be true usually are, which was the reason Edmund argued against it from the outset."
The king grimaced as he recalled the diplomatic language in which Edmund Rustman, the Baron of Stonekeep, had attempted to restrain his own enthusiastic response to the bait which had been trolled in front of him. Gorgia's grimace deepened at the memory.
"I'd like to say it was all the church's fault, well, the group of fours anyway, and I suppose it was. But be honest, Gorgia. Edmund was dead right to try to moderate your enthusiasm, wasn't he? And you wouldn't listen, would you? They'd figured out exactly the right lever to pull in your case, hadn't they? You resented the hell out of the treaty, never mind the fact that it had its good sides as well, and you figured it was a chance to get your own back. And why did you think that way? Because you were a frigging idiot, that's why."
His grimace turned briefly into something like a snarl. Then it vanished, and he folded his hands behind himself, turned his back on the window, and crossed to the lavishly carved, not quite a throne chair, at the head of the brilliantly polished table. Summer sunlight from the window bounced off the imperfect mirror of the tabletop, throwing a spot of brightness on the council chamber ceiling as he seated himself. The chair had been custom-built for his father, who'd been considerably taller and stockier than the slender, dark-haired Gorgia. The king favored his mother, physically at least, far more closely than he ever had his father. And he contemplated, not for the first time, the desirability of having a new one, one that made him look less like a child sitting in his parents' chair, commissioned. From the viewpoint of political psychology, of his ability to dominate meetings, the notion probably had much to recommend it, but the chair was almost sinfully comfortable. Besides, as a boy, then Prince Gorgia had spent quite a few hours sitting in his father's lap in this very chair. Those memories came back to him every time he sat in it, and especially over the last couple of years when his infant son, Roland, had been cuddled in his own lap.
"I wonder if he'll ever get to sit in it," the king thought moodily. "For that matter, I wonder how much longer I'll get to sit in it."
They were both valid questions, and he didn't much care for the answers which tended to suggest themselves. Caleb of Caris had obvious reasons to want his blood, given the way Taro had betrayed the terms of their treaty. Simply adding Taro's fleet to the onslaught on Caris would have been bad enough, but Gorgia hadn't stopped there, oh no. He'd followed Chancellor Trenaire's orders like a good little henchman, and lied to King Harald as well. Promised to honor his treaty obligations even as he was ordering Baron Whiteford to rendezvous with the Royal Dolaran Navy. The fact that Harald had been subsequently killed only made bad worse in that respect, although Gorgia could at least reflect that none of his ships had been involved in the Battle of Darkos Sound. So he could argue that he personally hadn't contributed to Harald's death. Not that he expected that particular fine distinction to cut much ice with Harald's son.